Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Hassine. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, how dangerous can a book be? We will spend most of this program trying to answer that question in view of the new censorship laws in the United States and growing pressures here in Canada to ban certain books from libraries and classrooms. Our journalist Pamela Hassan speaks with a librarian in Smithers, BC, promoting the Freedom to Read Week.
They're working as groups. They're exerting extreme pressure. They're going to school boards. They're going to town councils and all kinds of people who really shouldn't be involved in the decision of whether a library carries a particular book or not. And it's disastrous. And they're showing up at meetings with huge petitions. They're protesting. They're waving flags. And things, crazy things are happening. One mayor in Tennessee last year said that he would defund their library unless they purged it of all LGBTQ plus materials.
And we'll top things off with a story by Ryan Hunt about Indigenous micro courses being offered in Alberta to further truth and reconciliation.
The end goal is to help people make more informed decisions and contributions, whether that be in their personal lives or professional responsibilities.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
To those who wonder, that is the voice of our national coordinator, Maureen McEwen. Welcome again. Nice to have you with us. How dangerous can a book be? Well, it seems more and more people are showing up in different parts of the country and in the United States to pressure authorities, librarians, and school boards to bar certain books from their shelves and curriculum. And that's the question journalist Pamela Hassan has been digging into out west during the Freedom to Read Week in Canada. The week is marked annually in February, and even if some of us missed this year's Freedom to Read Week, the conversation is ongoing as we see what has been happening across the U.S. and Canada. So here's Pamela Hassan in this 20-minute documentary speaking about the Freedom to Read Week with Smithers, BC Public Library Director Wendy Wright.
Freedom to Read Week is an annual event that encourages Canadians to think about and reaffirm their commitment to intellectual freedom, which is guaranteed under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Freedom to Read Week is organized by the Book and Periodical Council. Historically, books and magazines have often been quietly removed from libraries and classrooms. Freedom to Read Week was founded in 1984 to challenge the covert nature of censorship, creating a broader awareness of these ongoing challenges to Canadian writing, and to allow Canadians to actively defend their right to publish, read, and write freely, as well as to widen their understanding of the negative effects of censorship. Over the years, Freedom to Read Week has become a regular feature of the annual programming of schools, libraries, and literacy groups across Canada. In Canada, Freedom to Read Week is in February, and it's this week between the 19th and the 24th. Tomorrow is the local culminating event of Freedom to Read Week in Smithers at the Smithers Public Library, with a presentation on the history and impact of banned books in Canada, as well as a fun trivia night for all to join and learn a little. Wendy Wright is on the news today to share some of the history and process of banning books and what this infringement in free education means for all readers. You may have read or seen news stories about Florida's 2022 House Bill 1467, which came into effect on January 1st of this year, which, quote, requires school districts to be transparent in the selection of instructional materials and library and reading materials. This legislation preserves the rights of parents to make decisions about what materials their children are exposed to in school. The bill continues to state, beginning January 1, 2023, school librarians, media specialists, and other personnel involved in the selection of school district library materials must complete the online training program developed by the Florida Department of Education prior to reviewing and selecting age-appropriate materials and library resources. A memorandum was sent recently to school districts calling for nominations for work group members to help develop this training. Here's a clip from a Jacksonville teacher, Andrea Phillips, from CNN, speaking about the effect of pulling these books from her class.
I'm going to start boxing out my books. And my heart really hurts.
A Florida elementary school teacher says she removed the books from her classroom library to comply with a new state law.
I decided to remove the books from my classroom library
out of necessity. It wasn't really a choice. Our district gave us an initiative. So districts are scrambling to try and keep up with this legislation. They're already understaffed, underfunded, and it's causing a lot of chaos within the district. So my particular district was, they decided to have teachers remove access to all classroom libraries and media centers until all books could be vetted.
Duval County Public Schools has directed teachers to use only approved books, while media center and classroom library books are reviewed by a certified media specialist.
My students were extremely upset, and they, you know, the first thing they did, they walked in and they looked to the corner where our little free library is that we keep, and they just said, "Where are our books at? What did you do with our books? Are you moving the library? What's happening?"
School districts across the state are implementing a contentious law Republican Governor Ron DeSantis signed last summer. It's all part of his push to legislate what is taught in Florida classrooms, including topics related to race and sexual orientation. HB 1467 calls for, quote, curriculum transparency, and says all library materials should be, quote, free of pornography. It also requires that books be vetted by a media specialist certified by the state. Video showing empty library shelves went viral, but a Duval district spokesman said it didn't show, quote, the other side of the library, fully stocked and open to students.
I'm shocked and I'm confused, and there's so much political posturing and there's so much confusion. I truly feel in my heart like public schools are being set up to fail.
A Duval spokesman says during the book review period, quote, there should not be a case when a classroom doesn't have any books, and that, quote, the list of approved books grows every day.
And now here's my conversation with Smithers Public Library Director Wendy Wright.
My name is Wendy Wright, and I'm the director of the Smithers Public Library.
Okay. Can you tell me, what is Freedom to Read Week?
Freedom to Read Week is an annual celebration of Canadians' right to read whatever they want and make up their own minds about it. Mm-hmm. It's about freely accessing a full range of opinions, perspectives, and being able to really pick and choose what you accept or reject for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So how did it come about? And then can you also talk a little bit about what's happening on the 24th?
Sure. So Freedom to Read Week is it's a celebration put together by the Book and Periodical Council of Canada. They have a Freedom of Expression Committee, and they create some great promotional materials and media buzz around this topic, because most people in Canada are surprised to learn that people are still trying to ban books right here in Canada today. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, we're going to tell you about some of those books in a fun way. We're holding a banned book trivia night here at the library, and it'll be a bit like Jeopardy, and mm-hmm. come on down and sit down with friends or new friends and have refreshments and make up a team and try to guess the banned books in our quiz game.
A lot of people have seen the library as well as Mills Stationery displays about banned books. So can you tell us about some of the banned books in the collection? I mean, without giving away the trivia answers that are going to be talked about on the 24th, or just maybe even some examples of why books have been banned.
Sure. Well, the fascinating thing when you're looking at which books have been banned is you can see patterns in the reasons that people challenge books in different areas of the country and through time. So it's really like looking at a picture of what people are afraid of or what people are offended by and how those values change over time, which is fascinating, really. I mean, you can look at also the difference between smaller centers like Smithers compared to larger ones like Toronto or Vancouver, and the kinds of items that are being challenged are very, very different depending on when and where you're looking at those lists.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, what's the process of these, when a book is challenged, what's the process? What happens?
Well, we have a form. So if someone comes up and says they don't want a book in a library, or they think a children's book should actually be in the teen or adult section, then we tell them about our policy and that they're able to fill out a form explaining the reasons why they feel that way, so that we can review it critically and thoroughly and come to a decision. The thing that's changed, though, is that it always used to be that a person would read a book and something would be in it that upset them. And they would come back and say, look, this book has this and this in it. I don't think it's a good book. I don't think it should be in the library, or I don't think kids should read it. And what's changed now is that still happens. But what's really, really different in the last 2 years is it's no longer largely people who've read the book. And it's not a single person, nor is it a single book. What is happening now is that organized groups are passing around lists on the internet of dozens, even hundreds of books, depending on the group. And they're passing it to all of the people they know and asking them to en masse demand the removal of massive lists of books. And even some of them even say, and any other books by any of these authors, without them even having read the books.
And we learned from the Freedom to Read website, and I quote, that in 2019, people demanded the removal of Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale from public library shelves in the United States. Complainants objected to profanity and vulgarity and sexual overtones in the text, said the American Library Association. The novel, published in 1985, depicts the future Christian theocracy in the southern half of North America, end quote. In Ontario, most of you remember the scandal provoked in September 2020 when Verushka Lieutenant-Duval, a teacher at the University of Ottawa, wanted to talk about author Pierre Vallière's book published in 1968, and a book who used the N-word in its title. And in Quebec, a writer, Elise Gravel, had great success in Canada and around the world with her children's book Pink, Blue, and You, talking about gender and sexual orientation. Well, her book was recently barred from certain American schools. The Freedom to Read website publishes a long list of books, magazines, and newspapers that were challenged in Canada and across the globe over the years. Back to Pamela Hassan's interview with Smithers BC Public Library Director Wendy Wright.
What is so powerful about banned books then? I mean, like, you know, we're kind of talking then and now. I understand and I hear how this is very different now, that it's more just the idea of a book, or the, I guess, insidiousness or danger of an idea that challenges your principles or values, which is kind of the point of books, to bring this information. But what do you think is powerful about a book that's been banned in the past that maybe now we call a banned book, but is still readily available for people?
It's really powerful to me to be able to see what people used to be so afraid of and then compare it to how our culture is shifting now. Even if there's something that lets us, even if there's something like, let's say the classic example is Mein Kampf, is a very dangerous book. Mm-hmm. It was used as to justify horrific things, and it was banned in Germany after the war. Mm-hmm. But when we look at it today, then we're unfortunately sometimes able to look for echoes in the world around us today. Mm-hmm. When we look at the headlines, when we look at the news, and it's a cautionary tale for us today. Mm-hmm. It was much more back then, and it means different things to different people, but it's still a very valuable educational document when we look at what were the factors that made this horrific thing able to happen. Mm-hmm. And this book was a large part of that. Yeah. It was given to newlyweds in Germany during Hitler's rule. So when we look at books that have really, really disturbing aspects to them, mm-hmm. there can be many positive things that come out of studying those books with a critical eye.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did talk about how a book would be challenged locally, but what about something that maybe is more you know, more than one community or something that's banned, maybe even Canada-wide. I'm not pulling up an example because I'm not sure. So maybe you have an example of that. But how far does that process go? I mean, is it like up to like legislature? But like who actually makes those final decisions to ban a book?
What's happening these days, it's people are really, it's really changed. They're working as groups. They're exerting extreme pressure. They're going to school boards. They're going to town councils, and all kinds of people who really shouldn't be involved in the decision of whether a library carries a particular book or not, mm-hmm. are stepping in and making decisions when they are not trained in library and information yeah. science. They're not trained in literature, mm-hmm. and their job does not involve being committed to select materials that represent every facet of the community and opens people's minds to also what is beyond the community out in the wider world. Mm-hmm. And it's disastrous. So people are showing up, they're organizing through social media, and they're showing up at meetings with huge petitions, they're right. protesting, they're waving flags, and things, crazy things are happening. One mayor in Tennessee last year said that he would defund their library unless they purged it mm-hmm. of all LGBTQ plus materials yeah. In all kinds of places. They're actually hiring security for board meetings. People are showing up armed in the States to public library board meetings mm-hmm. demanding that mostly LGBTQ plus materials yeah. be removed. And when you look at places like Florida and Texas, it really starts to sound like some of the dystopian novels that they're banning.
Yeah. You're exactly right. That is exactly what it sounds like. I was just about to speak about Florida with HB 1467.
Yes.
The ban and basically reform in almost just education, full stop, because, yeah, exactly. What's the danger of this sort of... this kind of long arm of the law reaching into places like classrooms where teachers just want to give their goodness. Children, books that represent themselves, books that represent and challenge maybe some of their values that they're being taught, but that school is this place where you can see outside of your tiny little mm-hmm. worldview. Mm-hmm. And kind of what's your response from a librarian, but also as someone who's obviously very passionate about this?
Oh, it's horrific. It's absolutely, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd see this happen because it's not unprecedented, but I didn't think we'd see it again.
Yeah.
You know, not in my lifetime, mm-hmm. hopefully not ever. So what's happening is that Florida librarians and teachers are emptying or covering up or blockading access to their bookshelves and libraries. Mm-hmm. So kids cannot get books. And the reason why is a few bills that have been passed. So under Florida's House Bill 1467, all school books, including those in classrooms, must be reviewed by a district employee who has completed a special online education
right.
program. Now, that program was not made available until last month. But at the same time, so the law was passed on January 1st, that you had to have that online training program certification, and Bill 1467, if you choose to violate that bill, you could be charged with a third-degree felony mm-hmm. because Bill 1467 stacks on top of a previous law, which is also...
limiting?
Yes, it's limiting because it's overly broad, which makes it a felony to knowingly distribute to a minor on school property any material that is sexually explicit. Now, when you're looking at calling something sexually explicit, it really, really depends on who's looking at it. Mm-hmm. Not only who's looking at it with a critical eye to making it available, but also which student is looking at it. We don't expect 3-year-olds or 2-year-olds to be looking at the same book as a 17-year-old. Yeah. But when you're talking about school, you've got, well, I guess it would be 4-year-olds, 4-year-olds to 17-year-olds. Yeah. Just because a book is not appropriate for a 6-year-old doesn't mean that a 16-year-old can't relate to it.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, and this is also new in Florida, kindergarten to third grade classroom books must be free of instruction on sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, the length this has been carried to is they're even banning books about things like crayons who wish they were a different color.
Oh, my God.
And the other thing is, with all of these laws, when it talks about sexual orientation, of course, what it doesn't say, but what is happening and what was the intent very clearly is it's only talking about homosexual orientation,
of course,
not heterosexual orientation.
Right.
So what do you think, and we'll kind of, you know, localize it back or at least to Canada, but what do you think Canadians can do to fight this type of, dystopian future that is not so in the future? It's very much right now.
Yeah. Well, I guess the first thing is I want Canadians to know that freedom of expression is your right in Canada. And it's everyone's right, even those people you disagree with. Don't try to take it away from them, because it can be taken away from you depending on who's in a decision-making position at the time.
Yeah.
So that's why libraries are so committed to intellectual freedom. We're not trying to decide what's right. We're trying to stand tall and say, we will have everything, because we don't want one day someone who has a really narrow view of what's right to get everything that they don't think is right out of the library, right? So freedom of expression is it's enshrined in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Section 2B of the Fundamental Freedoms. That protects freedom of thought, belief, opinion, and expression, including freedom of the press and other media of communication. And furthermore, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 19, states everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. Mm-hmm. And that is what libraries are committed to. We also believe that it's not our place or even within our power to try to figure out why someone wants to read a book. You can be reading a book discover you disagree with everything in it. You can be reading a book because you suspect you disagree with it and you want to find out what the arguments are so you can argue against it. Mm-hmm. You can read a book because a friend of yours read it and said, it's really good, you should read it. Mm-hmm. And you might not agree with it, but there are a million reasons for someone to read a book, and we don't assume that everyone's just going to unthinkingly, immediately believe and act out on whatever is in the book they're reading.
Yeah. Wendy, this has been so thoughtful, and I really appreciate the time. Was there anything else that I didn't ask for that you wanted to add to this discussion?
To reiterate what I said about having tolerance for other people's points of view that you disagree with. It's fine to disagree, but for many reasons, it's important to still be able to access those points of view. And just remember that who's in power, even in making decisions in a library on what you're going to carry, all of those people who make decisions change all the time. Mm-hmm. So instead of deciding what's right and trying to tell people that they should only carry what's right, mm-hmm. instead try to make sure that everyone is included so people can access everything and you can make up your own mind about what's right or wrong.
Yeah. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Scano, I'm Andrew Dow in Six Nations, Ontario. You are listening to Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
And we'll close the show and stay out west where the University of Alberta's Faculty of Native Studies is beginning to offer 5 micro courses on Indigenous topics that aim to expand upon Indigenous education and truth and reconciliation. A micro course is like a regular course, but the syllabus is narrowed down to a specific topic and only takes 5 to 10 hours to complete in total instead of an entire semester. The courses launch on April 1st, and the topics covered are overviews of Indigenous peoples in Canada, tackling structural racism, and countering stereotypes of Indigenous peoples. In Edmonton, Alberta, here's Ryan Hunt speaking with Avery Letendre, continuing education and online project manager at the University of Alberta's Faculty of Native Studies.
The end goal is to help people make more informed decisions and contributions, whether that be in their personal lives or professional responsibilities. We're really hoping that by taking up these opportunities, people can really look at their responsibilities individually and collectively so that there's ethical solutions that they're better able to apply.
Letendre says that the courses and the message behind them holds significance to her.
The courses and the messages really are about building understanding and respect and engagement with Indigenous sovereignty. To me, it means building up that knowledge that really advances the self-determination of Indigenous nations when we're thinking of how to respond, for example, to the TRC calls to action or other ways where we're really wanting to contribute to a different future here in Canada, here on Turtle Island. That's really what it means to me, is how we can look collectively at contributing in the places where we have those spheres of influence to Indigenous self-determination.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
That's all for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists this week, Pamela Hassan and Ryan Hunt, and their guests. National editor Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Great to have you with us. Stay tuned to the show that follows. Until next week, ciao.
On Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.